Hi, friends. Welcome to the By Faith Podcast. I'm your host, Christine Hoover, and I'm so glad you're here. Each week this season, I'm talking with a guest about how they are pursuing devotion to God by fighting sin and learning to delight in Him. Through their stories, we are learning how we too can fight for wholehearted allegiance to King Jesus. Friends, I want you to know that I have a new book releasing in March called With All Your Heart, Living Joyfully Through Allegiance to King Jesus. Sounds familiar, huh? I wrote this book because I saw how my own heart was constantly being led away by subtle allegiances to things like worry and control and escape. And I saw how those things promised me peace and answers and comfort, but never fulfilled those promises. I was giving my heart away and getting nothing in return. At the same time, I was reading the book of Matthew and leaning in intently to Jesus' words about the kingdom of God. This kingdom, he says, doesn't have space for people-pleasing and anxiety and image maintenance, because this kingdom has a king and he is life. He doesn't demand our lives for any other reason than to give. He gives us life, peace, and joy, and all the things that we constantly look to our false allegiances for. And as I read Matthew, all my little kings were seen for what they were. They never kept their word to me. My heart belongs to King Jesus. He is my joy. I want that joy for you too. I wrote this book to remind us all that we are well taken care of in the kingdom of God, and that our best and only allegiance is when we give it to the one who fulfills every promise. This book is meant to be a heart check for us. I am raw about my own false allegiances, but I also call the reader out. I wrote it with discipleship relationships in mind, even providing heart-level questions and actions we can take together to fight our false allegiances. I hope you'll take the challenge with me of examining your allegiances. Find the book wherever books are sold, or head to my website, christinehoover.net, to find out more. This episode is sponsored by The Good Book Company, publishers of The Garden, The Curtain, and The Cross. This beautiful hardback Bible storybook for children aged 3 to 6 takes them on a journey from the Garden of Eden to God's perfect new creation. Children will learn that Jesus breaks down the barrier of sin between us and God so that we can enjoy Him forever. Now available in 2020 is an Easter family devotional. Pick up a copy at thegoodbook.com or wherever good books are sold. I'd also like to thank B&H Publishers for supporting the podcast. Parenting is hard for everyone, but if you're parenting a child with special needs, it's another ballgame altogether. You do your best every day and hope it's enough. As a parent of special needs, author and advocate Jamie Sumner gets it. That's why she wrote her new book, Eat, Sleep, Save the World, Encouragement for the Special Needs Parent. It's an encouraging and empowering read for special needs parents, offering them celebration, a hallelujah, a high five for what they are doing right, and a reminder about the peace in God for what they feel they lack. Every parent needs to be reminded that they are superheroes, but especially special needs parents. So grab a copy of Eat, Sleep, Save the World by Jamie Sumner for yourself or for a special needs parent in your life who needs that reminder. The book is available wherever books are sold. Guys, today's conversation is so good. My guest is Heather Creekmore. Heather is the author of a book called Compared to Who, and the host of a podcast also called Compared to Who. So you can probably guess what we talked about in our conversation today. Heather shares how she first began struggling with comparison and with her body image, and how she spent decades chasing that elusive number on the scale. She then shares what God showed her that changed everything in her life, and specifically in her thought process. Heather talks about how comparison and self-obsession were at the heart of her issues, and how she still intentionally fights comparison today. Here, friends, is my conversation with Heather Creekmore.
Thank you, Heather, for joining me on my podcast. This is so fun because we've talked over email, but I don't think we've ever talked.
I know. I'm glad to finally meet you virtually, still.
Even though it's over the computer, we're meeting for the first time, which I'm so excited for, because you have built just this whole ministry around what we're going to talk about today. So I cannot wait to learn from you. But I want to start with just who you are, where you are, what you're doing right now.
Sure. Well, I am a mom of four and I'm married to a pastor and we planted a church. So I kind of got to know you a little bit through the church planning life way back when. And we planted a church, but now we're at Austin at Hill Country Bible Church. My husband's got kind of a different role there. But so I've lived the pastor's wife, church planner's wife life. Like I said, we got four kids and somewhere along the line after number four, I decided I'd start writing because, you know, I didn't have enough to do, I guess. and I felt like God gave me a burden to talk about an issue that I had struggled with all my life. And so, and that was body image. And that's what I know we're going to talk about today. But I wrote a book on body image. It came out in 2017. And since then, I've been just writing and speaking and talking to women all over the country about how they can stop comparing themselves to others and how they can improve their body image without actually having to change a thing about their body.
And your book is called, you got to say the name of the book because everybody is interested now.
Yes. It's called Compared to Who. And if you have any grammar snobs listening, I know they're thinking it should be Compared to Whom, which has been a big challenge for me as a writer. So I do know that Compared to Whom is grammatically correct, but it sounded kind of snobby. So we went with Compared to Who. And the goal was just to make it a real relatable book for women to just learn how to find freedom without it being a burden to, you know, pursue some elusive goal, but rather to just be able to find freedom God's way.
Yeah. Well, I want to talk about that, but we have to first talk about that you were on Nailed It, the TV show. That's so funny because my kids love that show. And we turned it on the very first time and I was like, I think I know that person. Because I had seen your picture or maybe, you know, I knew what you looked like. And I was like, and they said, Heather, maybe even that you were from Texas. And I was like, oh my goodness, I think I know her. So I go and look it up and there is you. You were on Nailed It, the very first episode.
Yes. You know what, Christine? So that is one of those crazy evidences that God loves me. Let me explain.
Yes.
So like I have always loved baking shows, cooking shows. Like I love me some Food Network, but if you saw the episode, I'm not very good, right? I'm not a perfectionist in the kitchen. And so that makes baking really challenging for me. But like, I've always like read the entry rules for the Pillsbury, like Bake Off and just had this like deep seated inner dream that someday I could do that. But it's not something I ever shared with anyone, like not even my husband, no one knew this. And so I randomly get this message one day and it looked like spam, but of course I responded to it. Don't ask me why, but I get this message saying, hey, would you be interested in being a part of this new baking show for people who aren't good bakers? And I responded and, you know, within a couple months I had an audition and a couple months later I'm recording the television show and it was a dream come true. And it was for me just an evidence that there are those little secret dreams we have in our hearts and God knows them and he sees them and he's able to accomplish what should have been impossible. I mean, getting someone who's as horrible a baker as me on a television show, like that was just never going to happen. But,
how did they find you?
So I had used the hashtag bake fail, like maybe three or four times because, you know, I'm such a great baker. And so they did a universal search of the hashtag bake fail and just, you know, sent it out there that they were starting this show. And I mean, I had no idea what I was signing up for, honestly, when I auditioned, but it all worked out okay.
But so give us a behind the scenes when you're on the show, is there anything that happened or any, you know?
Oh, well, so that episode that was maybe 25 minutes long on Netflix. We filmed that for 12 hours.
Wow.
So that was insightful. And, you know, when they say, get ready, get set, go, run to your stations, like they stop the cameras then. You go and you sit with lawyers and they make sure that you know the rules of the contest and that you understand everything that you're supposed to do. And, you know, and you take a lunch break then. I mean, and then you come back and you pretend. There were so many times where they filmed us like looking surprised and we saw nothing in front of us. So I got really good at like, just, you know, the look of shock, and there's absolutely nothing in front of me that I'm shocked about. So, but it was a great experience. I mean, it was so fun. I'm really hoping that they'll invite me back for a rematch.
Yeah. Well, didn't you win, or you won the first round at least?
I won the first round, and then I kind of won by losing. I mean, I didn't get the money, but there was a whole thing that they were going to do, and they cut it out of the show, but where they had like the loser take a picture of their bake fail. So it looked just like the Pinterest, you know, like what it's supposed to be, and then the nailed it fail. They had a picture of that made, and I was supposed to go walk that to the wall. And so they filmed that. I mean, I had to take that walk holding that picture. Like, I took that walk like 12 times to get it just right. And then they ended up not using it in the show. But if you watch the show and look in the background behind the kitchens, you'll see all these pictures on the wall of bake fails. And so I did hang mine back there. But yeah, so I thought, well, you know, if I did the worst job, then perhaps they would invite me back someday. So
That's so fun. I love that. Well, let's jump into your story. And you alluded to it while ago, but let's just start at the beginning. I think just kind of, I want to ask, how did you first know that you struggled with body image? Has it always been would you say the struggle has been body image, or the struggle has been comparison? And when did you first recognize that that was something you were really, really struggling with?
So I don't know if I would have been able to call it either of those things when I was in the struggle. But I remember as young as third grade, looking in the mirrors, I convinced my mom to buy me this pair of pink pleather pants. I think they call it like vegan leather now, but like pink fake leather pants. And I'm wondering why my mom allowed me to get these pants in the third grade, but she did for some reason. And so I had these ugly pink pleather pants, and I put them on, and I remember looking in my full-length mirror and thinking, wow, pink pants kind of make my legs look big. And from that moment on, I remember looking around and kind of always comparing the size of my legs to the size of other little girls' legs. By the time I got to middle school, I was dieting. Slim Fast was really popular then, and my mom would do Weight Watchers, so I would kind of try to follow in her footsteps and, you know, count the points or whatever it was at that time. By the time I got to high school, I was doing a diet, which I would call see how long I could go without eating. And I would try to go all day long without eating. And I was able to keep myself busy enough at school where it wasn't really a big deal. But then I'd get home 4:30, 5 o'clock. And of course, like a normal human being, I'd be ravenously hungry. And so I would eat everything I could. And then I'd end up eating dinner normally with my family. And then I'd go to bed thinking I had failed. Like I had done something wrong because I ate, and that I'd messed up. And then I would resolve the next day, okay, tomorrow I'm going to do better. I'm not going to eat tomorrow. And so really controlling my weight through not eating was a really bad habit, to say the least, for me. And I would say that I fell into a category called EDNOS, eating disorder not otherwise specified, because back then, this was like late 80s, early 90s, you had bulimia and you had anorexia, but I wasn't super thin and I couldn't throw up, although I did try, but I couldn't make myself throw up. So I didn't really fall into either of those categories. And I honestly thought that I just had kind of the normal girl problem. Every female that I knew struggled with, you know, wanting to be thinner, wanting to look better. I watched my mom and others in my family, you know, talk about going on diets and how to lose weight. And I just thought that this was normal, that it was part of being a woman to always have to worry about this. So by the time I got to college, my sophomore year, I lost my period for 9 months. Oh. And again, didn't seek help because, you know, I think I mentioned it to a few friends that were, you know, medically connected, and they said it was probably just stress. And got out of college and kind of continued the same cycle of, you know, diet after diet after diet, just hoping that I would find freedom from this burden by getting to a certain weight or by getting thin enough. And eventually, I figured this was my brilliance. I'm being sarcastic, but I thought that if I could become one of those people that worked at a gym, you know, the person in front of the aerobics class or the person with personal trainer written on their shirt, I thought if I could become like one of those people, then I would be free. And so I made that a goal. And even though I had other jobs, I worked in politics and did a variety of other things through my 20s, that was really like a passion for me. And got into, you know, teaching aerobics and working at a gym part-time, and realized that fixing my body, getting that body that I thought would make me be free, didn't really help at all. My problem was much, much deeper than that.
So did you achieve that goal of the specific weight you had in mind or the body type that you wanted? So you achieved that, you look in the mirror, you look at the scale, you've succeeded according to the goals you set. How did you feel in that moment?
It wasn't enough. I mean, I remember, not that I would have been able to consciously think this at the time, but I remember way back when thinking, if I could be that person in front of the room teaching aerobics, then I know that I had arrived. And I remember my first class so vividly, standing in front of that room teaching kickboxing, thinking, oh my word, like that woman in the front row is in much better shape than I am. Oh, that woman in row three, she should really be teaching this, not me. And I'm just feeling completely, you know, unqualified and not like I had arrived anywhere at all. And so that was kind of the first thing that I falsely believed would fix it. And then after I achieved that goal, I thought, well, you know, the problem is that I'm single. Like, people who are married don't struggle with body image. I mean, that's ridiculous. Now that I've been married for 15 years, I'm like, oh, who was that crazy person thinking that? But I thought, you know, if I just had a man to affirm me, then I wouldn't have the struggle anymore. And I mean, Christina got married shortly after I started teaching aerobics. And I remember clearly our wedding night, waking up the next morning, and we were in a small hotel in Washington, D.C. And when you sat up in bed, you could kind of see yourself in the mirror, like right in front of you. And I remember sitting up in bed and looking at my, you know, post-wedding day self, thinking, I don't feel any different. I was still disappointed, unsure about, you know, the way I looked. And then I kind of carried that into our marriage. And I mean, it's a miracle that we're still married today as I look back on the amount of crazy in terms of my body image that I brought into our marriage, just how much I thought my husband would fix it for me. And because he couldn't, I would put pressure on him. Like, you're not saying the right things. You're not doing the right things. Like, I shouldn't feel this way. And it's because of you. And it kept spiraling. I could not find a way out of it.
Yeah, it almost seems like a deep pit that you kept going down further and further. And I would imagine you felt like you were frantically looking for a solution. And so were the solutions a new goal? As long as you had a new goal, or what, how did you think through that?
You know, really, it was, I like to kind of put it into the category of, I had three specific things that I thought would fix it. So the first one was becoming a fitness instructor, reaching my goal weight, reaching my, you know, ideal body, if you will. And the second one was getting married. And then there was one more. I really believed, and this is laughable as well, but I really believed that if I could be a mom, that had always been a dream of mine, if I could just become a mom, then I would be using all of that brain space that I used to worry about calories and how much I had worked out. I would have to use all that brain space to help keep little people alive. And so I got pregnant. Not because of this, but I got pregnant thinking like, this is going to help. Like, I'm going to have something so big and important to do that I'm not going to stress about my body anymore. And of course, it's the first time in my life that I'm not on a diet, right? Because mm-hmm. you're not allowed to be on a diet when you're pregnant. So I am living it up, really enjoying eating all the things, gained a whole lot of weight, a lot more than I should have. But still feeling that pool of, oh, you know, my value, my worth, which I really connected to the way I looked, is diminishing with every pound I'm gaining for this mm-hmm. baby. And going to those OBGYN appointments and feeling like it's a Weight Watchers weigh-in, right? Where you're like taking off your heavy earrings and, yeah. you know, using the bathroom a couple times before you do it, because that number still mattered way too much to me. And then I had 4 kids in 4 years.
Wow.
Well, almost 5 years, but my youngest turned 5 3 months after, excuse me, my oldest turned 5 3 months after my youngest was born. So we just cranked him out, which meant for 5 years I was either nursing or pregnant. And it was really during that time that God started speaking to me about like this issue and getting to the heart of this issue. And he really showed me some things that I never in a million years even dreamed he would show me. And my path to freedom was so different than getting the ideal body or, you know, having a husband to say all the right things or having a baby. He showed me that the path to freedom was really different and a lot more attainable than any of those, you know, those things were.
So what did he reveal was in your heart?
So he showed me idolatry. And I was raised in a Christian home. I mean, I went to a Christian school from seventh grade on. I went to a Christian college. I went to a Christian graduate school. So I mean, girl, I knew I was fearfully and wonderfully made, you know. I knew God made every woman beautiful. Like I knew all of the cliche things that we say. I knew them cold. And I would go to the rallies, you know, the rallies, well, the Christian women conferences, the one day retreats or whatever. And I would hear these messages about how awesome I was to God and how I was God's daughter. And I would be pumped up for like, you know, maybe 48 hours. Mm-hmm. And then I would collapse again. And I think what God showed me was that I had made my body image an idol. In that, he showed me that I had looked to my body image as something that would actually save me and give me peace, joy, happiness, everything that really only Jesus truly gives us. And so when I would hear messages about how I was made or how God loved me, I would internalize them as self-esteem messages, right? So instead of thinking about that God is really awesome for making me, you know, fearfully and wonderfully made for the amazing ways he created me, I would kind of confuse that and think it was about me. And I think that's why it always fell flat. That's why it only lasted for 48 hours. It's not that God's word wasn't good enough. It's that I internalized all those messages through the filter of my body image idol, through the filter of I need something to build my self-esteem. I kind of use the Bible as a self-esteem manual in a way, like looking for ways to pump myself up and taking the focus completely off God and what he offers. Mm. And I think the best way that I like to describe the body image idol, because I know this is just something that God showed me and really hit me hard when I recognized it, was I used to love reading the success stories at the back of like Shape and Fitness magazine, and shows like The Biggest Loser, where they show, you know, like the before and after, or a makeover story where there's a before and after. Like I ate those things up, loved them so much, right? Because there was a before and an after. And what God showed me was shows like Biggest Loser, like they give you hope, right? Like we all desire a before and after, but the hope is for a transformation that's just earthly, that's not eternal. So for example, like The Biggest Loser, when we watch the beginning of The Biggest Loser, the first episode, they show the contestants, they show them in their own sort of hell, right? And then they meet the trainer. It used to be Bob and Jillian, you know, it changed over the years, but they meet the trainer and the trainer transforms them. The trainer offers them a sort of salvation. And then at the end of the show, they're running marathons and they're wearing cute clothes, which is the American dream for a lot of women, right? That you can do all that. And so what we see in shows like that and in success stories, I think, is we see a transformation. We see salvation. We see this amazing, amazing, you know, really process of going from hell where all is lost to meeting a savior and going to a place where there's great hope. But what I think I had done over the many years that I struggled with this issue is I believed that my hope would come from that kind of transformation. Mm-hmm. Even though, I mean, I had said the sinner's prayer, you know, age three, and every time a pastor mentioned it, you know, just in case, like I was covered. Like I thought I had the God and Jesus answer, you know, check, check, I'm good. But what I didn't realize was how blinded I was by this earthly view of transformation and how really I had God and Jesus, right? I had like salvation that was eternal, but I still put more hope into some sort of earthly transformation to save me. to bring what I thought I really desired. And I was missing out on God's definition of really all that is good.
Guys, I know you're loving this conversation with Heather, but I wanted to stop and quickly tell you about an event I'm hosting here in my hometown, Charlottesville, Virginia. On Monday, March 2nd, I am hosting a free book launch event for With All Your Heart, my new book, and you are invited. I'll be doing a live podcast recording, and Hannah Anderson, one of my favorite authors, she wrote Humble Roots and a few others. She's my fellow Virginian. She's going to be joining me as a guest host and turning the questions on me. In addition, I'll interview some of my local friends about how they're fighting their false allegiances. It's going to be tons of fun, and I would love for you to join. Tickets are free, but space is limited. So click on the link in the show notes or head to my website, christinehoover.net, to reserve your seats today. All right, friends, let's get back to my conversation with Heather Creekmore.
So in that moment where you realize this, God's showing you this, I would imagine, I mean, the grooves in your brain of how you have thought for however many decades of yourself, of God, of your body, that doesn't just change overnight, right? Yeah. And so can you help us understand what that transformation, how did it begin? And
sure.
What were some of the first things that you knew had to be different?
Sure. Well, I mean, I think where it first began was when I recognized the idol, I recognized, oh, this isn't just a normal girl problem. Mm-hmm. This is a sin problem, right? And when I speak to women, that's not a super fun thing to say. You know, it's, hey, guess what, guys? Great news. You might actually have a sin problem at your body image issues. Like, woohoo, like no one cheers for that. But where they do cheer, where it does get exciting is, you know, if it's a normal girl issue, there's no hope, right? You always have to carry that bondage, that baggage with you wherever you go. If you're born female, sorry, you're going to have this normal girl issue. You're going to have to worry about your body for the rest of your life. But if you can find that little root of sin, like there is hope, right? I mean, you know, we've got great hope. Like God forgives the sin. He forgets the sin, right? Like we can be totally free from it. So that was where I started, was recognizing that. But you're right, like patterns of thought do not change overnight. It was not like I flipped the switch and, oh, great, now I feel so wonderful about the way I look. Yeah. It wasn't that at all. I mean, it's still a struggle, but it's a struggle really in my thoughts, right? Yeah. Because that's where body image issues lie, right? Yeah. I mean, models have body image issues, right?
Yeah.
People that we look at and we think you should not have body image issues, they have body image issues, right? So body image issues aren't about the way we look at all. They're about our thought life.
Yeah.
And so what started to happen was gradually I started to, with God's help, you know, every day surrender that idol. Like, I'm not going to bow to that idol today. And sometimes that's hard, right? When you get on the scale, or, hey, you know, 40 was a couple years ago. So, you know, I'm like, boy, this aging thing, that's for real. I kind of thought maybe I'd avoid it, but it's for real. And so, you know, looking in the mirror, getting on the scale, like getting those judgments, if you will, back, right? Getting those assessments and not taking them as assessments of my value anymore. Mm-hmm. Stopping and taking those thoughts captive and recognize it's just my body image idol that says that determines my worth. You know, it's just my body image idol that wants me to keep chasing that smaller number on the scale. But what God really wants is for me to pursue his purpose for my life. Mm-hmm. What God really wants is for me to pursue having a pure and clean heart before him and obeying what he's called me to do today, not prioritizing like all the things that it takes to try to, you know, get a better body, if you will. Not that we don't take care of our temple, but I think what I love to point out when people kind of throw the take care of your temple verse at me is that like a temple is used for worship, right? Like we don't worship a temple,
right?
Take care of our temple so we can use it effectively for worship, not so people will look at us and be like, wow, that's a hot temple. What a great temple she has, you know? And so it's, so yes, and we have a responsibility to, you know, to take care of our temple, but we don't have to put on this burden of always making our temple hotter and better and thinner and all the things that culture tells us we need to do to be accepted. Like we can find our value. We can truly find it in Jesus alone.
Yeah. Well, can we talk about the comparison aspect of body image issues? Because really, it seems like there's a lot at the heart of it that you've talked about. You've talked about value, looking for value based upon your appearance. You've talked about setting a standard for yourself and meeting it, almost like a self-worship, self-obsessiveness. But I think there's often a comparison aspect to it as well. Was that the case for you?
Absolutely. Like I said, like early on, I know I was always looking around, comparing the way I look to others. We watched Entertainment Tonight every evening after dinner as a kid. And, you know, I don't think it was anything malicious on the part of my mother or anything like that at all. But as I look back over my childhood, I think that I did have a lot of opportunities to compare myself with the beautiful people, if you will. And to hear my parents and family members comment on, oh, how great she looks, or, oh, wow, she's lost some weight, or, oh, I like her hair like that. And that was just kind of like a natural way of thinking for me, was looking around and assessing how others looked. And then, of course, what do we do with that as human beings? We internalize that and compare how we look. And then there's also this, like you mentioned, this ideal, right? Mm-hmm. So some of us have an ideal that like maybe we reached, you know, 10 years ago or before kids or whatever. And then some of us have this ideal that's just elusive, right? That I think I should look like her. And there might not be like any way you can physically do that, but it just stays stuck in our head where, you know, no, she's who I should look like. I've got to keep working towards that. Or even beyond like looks, you know, we have this ideal of, oh, I mean, for me as a mom, I'm a homeschool mom. Okay. So I've got all this, all this extra layer of crazy with that. But, you know, like my kids should be eating organic snacks all day long, you know, like things like that, where you set up as your ideal. And then, you know, when they eat chips and granola bars, as mine most often do, you feel like you've fallen short of that ideal. And so I think sometimes, yeah, it's this elusive thing that we can compare ourselves to, not even reality. I think that's just as big of a trap as comparing yourself to someone who's real.
Absolutely. So how do you speak to yourself in those moments? Let's say it could be, I love how you brought in, this could be about anything. That we can think that there's a standard or there's someone we're trying to emulate. And that's not always a bad thing, to look at someone's character and say, wow, she's so full of joy. I want more joy in my life. So that's not always bad. But when we're comparing ourselves because we're looking to meet some standard so that we finally feel that we finally get that elusive peace or that elusive validation that you talked about, how do you talk yourself through those moments when you realize that you're comparing yourself and it started this stream of negative thoughts?
I think the first question to ask is, who says? Like, who says I should look like that? Who says I should be like that? Who says my children should only eat organic snacks? Like, who says? And then I think what happens when you're really in the midst of the struggle is a lot of times we reply with like, well, I say, like, I want it to be like that. Right? Like that's my standard. Like, I don't care what your standard is, but my standard is it should be like that. And I'm failing. I'm not meeting my own standards. But I think that's when it's important to remember in 1 Corinthians, Paul says, I think it's 1 Corinthians 4, Paul says, I don't even judge myself, right? He allows God to judge him alone. Because I think what happens is too often we make ourselves little gods. Like, it's my opinion of me that matters more than anyone else. And so we add all of these extra layers of expectations and all the things. And God's like, hey, I didn't ask that of you. Like, why are you chasing that? That wasn't my standard. That's not my expectation of you. And you know, in a way we idolize our opinions of ourselves and kind of keep ourselves trapped by comparing ourselves to this ideal and falling short.
That is so good. So it seems like, I mean, I know what you would say, but I hope that everyone listening is now thinking, so I have to know what it is that God says, God expects. because often what we do or what I do is I add more than what God is actually asking of me. So yeah, has that, I mean, speak to that, because we need to, I just want women to be encouraged about the importance of knowing what God says.
Absolutely. Well, you know, it's funny because it's hard, right? I mean, because we have messages all day long telling us what we should be, how we should look, how, what we should do. I mean, how our houses should be decorated, what our kitchens should look like, how we should cook. I mean, every layer of our lives, there is some message coming at us, either, you know, directly through marketing or indirectly through what our friends post on social media, right? There's messages coming at us like, I should be more like that. And so it is difficult to surrender that every single day and say, okay, no, God, I want what you have for me. I think one way I like to talk about it is Eric and I were going to a pastor's retreat, pastors and wives retreat a couple years ago, and we were flying to Miami, and we are both like super type A. And so we're like way too early for this flight. So we're sitting in the airport with nothing to do. And I'm watching people walk through this airport, and I'm noticing that people walk through the airport with purpose, right? Like very infrequently do you see someone kind of wandering aimlessly through the airport. Like they're looking for a gate, or they're looking for food, or they're looking for a bathroom, or they're running late and they're running to one of those locations, right? Yeah. I mean, but people walk through an airport with a sense of determination. And what God kind of showed me in that moment was all these people have a sense of determination because they have a boarding pass. Right? And on that boarding pass, it says exactly where they can go. Like I'm sitting at the gate for Miami, but if I decided that the next gate, like Maui, would be a whole lot more exciting, like I can't just go sit outside the Maui gate and be like, hey, please take me to Maui. It'd be so much more fun. Like they're going to be like, sorry, lady, like Miami's your destination. Yeah. Go back to your gate. And what God showed me in that was that if we can live on purpose, if we can discover like what it is that God has for us, like we can be truly free to not worry about what all the people around us are doing, not worry about what destination they're headed to, and just go to our gate and wait for our flight and go full gusto towards what he's called us to. And that can sound super elusive, especially if you've got like little kids at home and you're in the throes of motherhood. I mean, there are seasons where God allows our purpose to kind of just simmer, I think. It's still there, but maybe we can't like fully embrace it yet. But yeah. It's, you know, so I don't mean that to sound like some unachievable, like high, lofty goal. But I do believe, and this is a ridiculous thing to admit, but I've admitted it before, and so I'll admit it to your listeners as well. Like when I figured out, and I might sound slow saying this, but when I figured out that God did not call me to be a Victoria's Secret model, I am barely 5'5". I haven't weighed what a model weighs since, I don't know, maybe fifth grade. But when I finally was able to release that and be like, you know what, God, you did not give me what I needed physically to have a job in modeling. You have not called me to modeling. Modeling is not the purpose you have for my life. Like I was finally able to just surrender it and be like, you know what? Why am I trying so hard to look like a model? You know, why? Like, why am I putting so much energy and effort into that? That's not what he's called me to. And what I found is, okay, God gave me these really short fingers, but they type super, super fast. And so what God has called me to, writing, he has equipped me for. Mm-hmm. And I believe that that is like so true of everyone. Like mm-hmm. he's given us every single thing we need physically to accomplish his purpose for our lives. And when we get hung up on our body image, we're kind of saying, hey, God, you didn't give me what I need. You know, hey, God, I would totally do this for you if you would make me just a little hotter, a little thinner, a little whatever your hang up is. And I think God's just sitting there like, you know what, though? You would be so much more content if you would just stop pursuing that body and start pursuing me and the purpose I have for you. And that's what I found. I mean, I do not weigh what I did when we got married. I do not weigh what I did when I was teaching aerobics, but I feel so much more content and peaceful now in this season of life, pursuing what he has for me to do than I ever did back then.
I think that's so true. I've thought about that when I am busy doing what God has given me to do. And I don't mean over busy or whatever, but when I am actively working at what he's given me to do, I don't have time to think about what other people are doing or to, you know, I think social media can, that's often when I'm bored. I don't have time to be bored to go on social media and compare myself. Of course I deal with comparison, but I just feel like you're so right. When we're in that stream of pursuing the Lord and making sure that we're in the Word and we're seeking him and we're doing what he's asked us to do, we really kind of don't have time for a lot of other things that get us in trouble or that distract us from what he has for us. But let's talk about social media, because that is a huge component, especially now. We're seeing more and more studies talking about young women, young people. They can see these images and compare themselves on social media. So, and of course, it's not just for them. I mean, as an older woman, I struggle with that as well. So can you talk about how you handle social media?
Sure. Well, I think one of the biggest things, and I coach women individually on this issue, and one of the biggest things I think is to just be aware when those thoughts come. Because I think for so many of us, the thoughts come and we're so used to them. We've had them for so many decades that we just kind of let them sit there. And so what I coach women to do is to be aware as soon as you start to feel that coming up, as soon as you, I think you can almost feel it in your gut, in your heart, you're always like, oh, it kind of starts to turn a little bit. Yes. As soon as you feel that feeling, stop and ask what's causing it. And so in the case of social media, stop and ask yourself, okay, is it this image that this person posted that's causing it? And then honestly, if you're on Instagram, you unfollow. Right? If it's Facebook, you can mute that person for a while. And then I think you've got to stop and just ask yourself, okay, is social media where I need to be right now? Because if that's happening over and over again, and you're like unfollowing everyone, because everyone's images are doing that to you, then I think it's not the right season for you to be on social media. And I think the most healthy thing you can do is to take a break. Like I know we use Facebook, especially for like groups and business and all kinds of things, but there are ways around it. You can put direct links to things where you don't have to go through your feed and still can get the information you need from places like Facebook. And I recommend that women do that, that they take a break for at least 2 weeks, 14 days, and see how they feel. And then often is 14 days. They're like, you know, I think I can make it 21. And so they make it to the third week. And they start to kind of disconnect from, you know, from that constant comparison feed, if you will, and start to get some better perspective on it.
Yeah, it's like we're feeding ourselves with things that distract us from the Lord, that make us obsessed with about ourselves or obsessed with other people. We almost sometimes need that freedom for our minds to not have to worry about that, but to be free, to almost like unclouded, to think about God and to connect with him and to remember what's true. And what actually gives us peace and joy is connecting with him, not looking at what other people are doing. I think we sometimes think, I heard somebody say it this week, we keep scrolling thinking that the next thing is going to be the jackpot, whatever the jackpot is. But in reality, it's just, we're never going to get that jackpot from looking at the next picture or from that number on the scale or whatever. We think that it's somehow it's going to do something for us when we get there, but it's never the jackpot. No. But we all have access to the one that the Bible says is our peace and joy. That's really what we're looking for.
Absolutely. And so my new book, which won't come out until September of 2020, is it's a journey out of the land of comparison. It's how to really give up comparison. And what I dig into there is grace. Because really, if you spend a lot of time focusing and studying all the different layers of grace that God has given to us, to shown us. I mean, if you are completely consumed with a God who loves us at the depths that God loves us and does for us things like allows a horrible baker to be on a Netflix baking show. if you really dig into like how intimate God is in his love and affection for us, and are so focused on how much grace he's shown us, it really doesn't leave us a whole lot of room to look around and say, yeah, but I kind of wish I had her body, or I kind of wish my husband was as nice as hers, or I wish my kids were as well behaved as hers is, hers are. You know, it, if we can keep our eyes on him, not even on, because I think a lot of people say, you know, keep your eyes on yourself, but I don't think that's the right thing. You know, like what I like to encourage women to do is, well, you've probably heard it. You look in the mirror and, you know, you find that body part that you love and you just focus on that. Like that's the advice in all the magazines. What I like to encourage women to do is instead of looking in the mirror and finding that part that they love, to take that mirror and just kind of like tilt it up. And instead of looking in that mirror to find validation or to, you know, be happy with what they see staring back at them, when you tilt that mirror up, you're free, right? Because you're free to do what God's actually called us to do, which is not to make the mirror happy, but to reflect and glorify him. And so when we tilt that mirror up and stop trying to kind of make ourselves happy with ourselves, we are truly free to do what he's called us to do. And then that frees us from the pressure of keeping up with our own ideals or keeping up with everyone else.
Oh, so good. I love the images you're giving us that are helping us. This is really, really helpful. Well, I want to ask where you are now. I mean, you said you still struggle some. So can you talk about what that looks like and how you are fighting against going back to any sort of obsession with your body?
Sure. Well, I think that's really important for people to remember. Like God gives us freedom, right? But we're still stuck on this earth for as many days as he gives us. And so that doesn't necessarily mean it's freedom from struggle, right? So what it looks like for me is when I get on the scale, when I look in the mirror, the thought will come in and I will have to intentionally answer it back. If I'm on Facebook or Instagram and I see the image of, you know, for me, I'm especially susceptible to before and afters, you know, I see that before and after photo and I'm like, oh man, maybe I should go on another diet. Maybe this next diet, because those of us that are dieters are like really big into wishful thinking. It's always the next diet that's going to be the right one, right? So it's like, I have that thought, like it's the next diet, or maybe I should get those pills. Maybe those pills would help me. Maybe those would solve my problem. And I have to stop and say, wait a second, wait, like, I know this game. I've walked this road before. Like, no, I'm not going to make this my idol. I'm not going to bow down and worship this. I'm not going to believe that a bottle of weight loss pills is going to save me. I know the truth. I know that my value and my worth don't come from my weight. And yes, okay, maybe I should eat fewer M&Ms. like, okay, God, that's helpful instruction. Like I can do that. But I know that I don't have to take any kind of crazy, you know, crazy turn towards a new fad diet or, you know, a new fad exercise thing that isn't going to last once again. It's going to be a waste of money, energy, and time once again. And I can just trust that, God, you know what? You have a purpose for me and you've given me everything I need to accomplish that purpose. And I'm just going to focus on you today and not focus on these other crazy thoughts that are telling me, you know, how I should be or how I should define myself.
Well, Heather, this is just so helpful. Thank you for sharing your story. Thank you for sharing your hard-won wisdom with us. Because whether or not we struggle with body image, we all can relate to those kind of obsessive thoughts and things that distract us away and want to lure us into some sort of bondage. And so I really appreciate you sharing with us.
Sure. My pleasure.
Heather mentioned briefly that she's releasing a new book in September, and I know you're going to want to know more about it. It sounds really good. It's called The Burden of Better. Isn't that such a good name? And it's all about comparison, which is perfect after our conversation today. You can find out more about Heather's books and resources at her website, comparedtowho.me. Friends, join me next week for a conversation with author Rebecca Lyons on the subject of anxiety. Rebecca shares with us the rhythms that she lives in that helps her resist anxiety and trust in the Lord. Until then, friends, have a great week and keep walking forward by faith.